Bible reading this morning will be from Luke 16, verses 10 through 13. It's Luke 16, verses 10 through 13. He who is faithful in what is least is faithful also in much, and he who is unjust in what is least is unjust also in much. Therefore, if you have not been faithful in the unrighteous mammon, who will commit to your trust the true riches? And if you have not been faithful in what is another man's, who will give you what is your own? No servant can serve two masters, for he will either hate the one and love the other, or else he will be loyal to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and mammon.
Thank you, brother, for that reading from Luke chapter 16, verses 10 through 13. If you have your Bible, I appreciate if you stay open to that passage as we refer to it in our lesson this morning, and we're going to talk about a sacred trust. A young man was sent by the company that he worked for into the country of Spain to work in their new plant there. And he accepted that job because it enabled him to accomplish a dream that he had to secure enough living for he and his girlfriend and their future plans to be married. Their plan was to pool their resources and put a down payment on a house when he returned. As these lonely weeks went by, she being in the United States and he being in Spain, she began expressing doubts that he would be true to her. After all, she reasoned, Spain is populated by beautiful women. The young man declared that he was paying absolutely no attention to the local girls. I admit, he wrote, that sometimes I am tempted, but I fight it. I'm keeping myself for you. In the next mail, the young man received a package. It contained a note and a harmonica. She had written to him and said, I'm sending this to you so you can have something to take your mind off of those girls. The young man wrote back that he was practicing on the harmonica every night and thinking only of her. When the young man returned home to the States, his girl was waiting at the airport. And as he rushed forward to embrace her, she held up a restraining hand and said sternly, hold on. First, let me hear you play that harmonica. Did she trust him? Trust is a very important issue, isn't it? Without it, many things in our society just wouldn't work or would be severely hampered. You depend on trust every day of your life. I'll mention a few examples in a minute. Today's message is about trust, and I have five things I'd like to say about it to remind us of the nature of trust, and especially from a biblical perspective. I hope that before I'm finished, you're challenged to see the importance of building trust and preserving trust in your life, that you will make every effort to be a trustworthy person, and that your word will be your bond, and that the Lord can rely upon you. The first point I'd like to make is trust is essential to life and relationships. In living life, the trust question is very prevalent in our lives, even at times when we don't even think about it and we don't even realize it. When you need to have your car repaired, do you trust someone else that they will repair your car sufficiently to get it back on the road? When you're going to have surgery, do you trust the surgeons and the nurses that attend them that they will do the right thing to care for you and to take care of your problem and remove those problems far from you? You see, you have a measure of trust for other people. When you take a check from someone, do you trust them? When you're going to take a trip across the country, think about all of the people that you have to trust in order to do that safely. When your teenage daughter is picked up on a date from a young man, think of the measure of trust that you place in that person. Will that person treat your daughter like precious cargo when he picks her up and hauls her around town in his vehicle? Will he drive carefully? There's a measure of trust there. When you sit down at a restaurant to eat a meal, are you confident that you won't get food poisoning? You have some measure of trust in the preparation of other people. When you bare your soul before a Christian, one of your brothers or sisters, so that they can help you and encourage you and strengthen you, there's a measure of trust there. When you pass through an intersection while driving, hoping that someone will not hit you, you're placing your trust in the color of a light. In the middle of a busy intersection, think about it. When that light is green, you trust that the ones who see red will stop. Sometimes they don't, do they? But you trust that. As a husband or a wife leaving your mate to go on a trip, there's a measure of trust that must be there. In all of these situations, you are trusting someone or something. And in that trust, you rely on that person or that thing. Many times, without even thinking about it, we trust people dozens of times every day without giving it a second thought. Think about two automobiles passing on the highway, each one going 55 miles an hour or more, headed right for each other, and they pass within 3 or 4 feet of each other. Think of the trust that there is that other person won't cross the center line. Sometimes that does happen, doesn't it? But we don't think about those things quite often. Can you imagine what life would be like suddenly if you could trust absolutely no one? You might think, well, that would mean that I don't go to any restaurants anymore because I don't trust those people to prepare my food appropriately. Well, what about the food you buy in the grocery store if you can't trust people? Is that food going to be worthy for you to eat? Would you grow your own food? Would you trust that the fertilizer you bought at the local co-op would be what you intend it to be, to fertilize your crops that you're growing at home because you don't trust any other that you may purchase food from? You see that without trust, our whole world and our whole society and our relationships with people everywhere would be totally destroyed. You see how valuable trust is? And we don't even give it a second thought so many times. It's a bit like the air we breathe. We take it for granted until some reason it becomes fouled, and then we're forced to pay attention to it. The Bible mentions the concept of trust hundreds of times within its pages. Hundreds more times, though, it isn't mentioned, it is assumed. You might remember Chuck Colson, the former Watergate break-in conspirator who became an evangelical while he was in prison. And he wrote while he was in prison, and he referenced a man by the name of Samuel Johnson. And Samuel Johnson learned that one of his dinner guests believed that morality was merely a sham. And he said to his butler, well, if he really believes that there's no distinction between virtue and vice, let us count the spoons before he leaves. An applicable illustration, I think. He continues, today there aren't many spoons left to count. Look at Washington, Wall Street, academia, sports, the ministry, all the spoons are gone because we can no longer distinguish between virtue and vice. Unless we learn how to live with integrity, we are doomed. Integrity is a trust issue. There was a time in this country when the bad guys wore black hats, and you could pretty much identify who they were. Today, many are not really sure that they can even trust their own friends. We've seen a breakdown of trust in our country. Someone has said suspicion enters by the door through which trust exits. It surely seems that suspicion is the rule of our day. Back in the days of Jeremiah, just before the fall of Jerusalem to the Babylonians, Jeremiah lamented the condition of his people and the fact that you just couldn't trust anyone. He said that in Jeremiah 9, verses 1 through 6. Oh, that my head were waters and my eyes a fountain of tears, that I might weep day and night for the slain of the daughter of my people. In verse 3, they bend their tongue like their bow. Lies and not truth prevail in the land, for they proceed from evil to evil, and they do not know me, declares the Lord. Let everyone be on guard against his neighbor, and do not trust any brother, because every brother deals craftily, and every neighbor goes about as a slanderer. Everyone deceives his neighbor and does not speak the truth. They have taught their tongue to speak lies. They weary themselves committing iniquity. Your dwelling is in the midst of deceit. Through deceit they refuse to know me, declares the Lord. Jeremiah is describing the society that existed at that time. You see a breakdown that God takes notice of, and he doesn't appreciate that at all. Less than 50 years after those words were spoken, Judah was overrun by the Babylonian war machine as a judgment of God against them for these very things. A friendship or a family or a church or a nation of suspicious or cynical people where there is no trust is on the path to destruction. If what Jeremiah said and what happened to people in his day is any kind of a pattern for us. Trust is essential to life and to relationships. It's very, very important, and God recognizes the seriousness of that issue. Secondly, I want to mention to you that I think that trust is an earned commodity. I suppose there are a few exceptions to that, but not very many. A young woman raised in a good family where trust is assumed might be inclined to hand unearned trust to the first man who comes along and shows an interest in her. But once she gets burned, she's much slower to trust until she absolutely knows that another person is worthy of that trust. In other words, her trust must be earned. Trust is an issue between parents and teenagers many times. Teens say, well, why won't you trust me? Why won't you let me have the keys to the car? Why don't you trust me to go out on my own and do what I want to do? Probably because trust has not been earned. Trust isn't a birthright. It isn't something that automatically comes to our teenagers when they reach 16 years of age and the government says, okay, you can apply for a driver's license now. Trust is not a birthright like that. It's something that is earned. It's an earned right. If you're 16 years old and you've never gotten behind the wheel of a car, don't come to me and ask me for my car keys because you have not earned my trust yet. First, you have to prove that you can be trusted. In this case, that you have to show that you can drive and you're willing to take some instruction and you're willing to listen to warnings and you're going to be a careful person. And if I give you the keys of my car and you don't obey the speed limit laws and you race through the red lights and you don't stop at the stop signs and you drive recklessly and you wreck my car, will I give you my car keys again? Not very likely. Because trust has to be earned. This issue of earned trust is more clearly illustrated if you think of examples where people have breached a trust, where they have ruined a trust that someone has placed in them. So if I hand you the keys to my car and you go out and you drive this way, and you wreck it, there's an example. A man can become an elder in the church only after he has proven that he meets the qualifications and he can manage his own household. There's a reason for that. It's because trust has to be earned. Before a man can become a deacon, he must first be tested, according to what Paul told Timothy in 1 Timothy 3 and verse 10. These men must also first be tested. Then let them serve as deacons if they are beyond reproach. The principle there is that trust has to be earned. It's not a verbal exchange between people that says, are you trustworthy? And the answer is, yes, I am. Okay, then everything's all right. Trust has to be earned. Another thing to think about is that trust is built on individual deeds of faithfulness. Perhaps if you are a teenager who would like to earn your parents' trust, I'm going to tell you how to do that. It has to do with the deeds that you do from time to time and what they represent. Wouldn't it be great to have more freedom to do the things that you want to do, knowing that your parents trust you? Do the deeds that show that you are trustworthy and build that trust, and your parents will trust you. Or perhaps due to things that have happened in your marriage, there is a suspicion between you and your spouse. Or perhaps you would like to try to qualify for a deacon or an elder in a local church, and you realize that trust is really a big issue. It's a big thing with God. It's important. I have said that trust is earned. What can you do to earn trust? In the first place, be attentive to little things. That's very important. Luke 16 and verse 10 says, in our text, he who is faithful in very little thing is faithful also in much. And he who is unrighteous in a very little thing is unrighteous also in much. There's a similarity between building trust and building muscles, I think. The guy who wants to build his muscles doesn't walk down to the gym, purchase a membership, and walk in there and try to bench press 400 pounds. He has to start small. He has to work his way up gradually. And I think that's a good illustration of how trust comes into the lives of people. Don't you? If you want to earn someone's trust, don't wait around for some big issue to come along. Earn someone's trust in the little things. Because those little things are like little matchsticks that you can collect together by the hundreds and then build a whole city, if you wish, out of those little matchsticks. Or those little toothpicks. Or those little popsicle sticks. Little deeds. Small incidents that happen in life that build people's confidence in you that you are indeed trustworthy. Work on the little things. 1 Corinthians 4 and verse 2. In this case, moreover, it is required of stewards that one be found trustworthy. All Christians recognize that they are stewards of something. God has given you something. He's blessed you in some way. He's allowed you to use things to glorify His name. They're on loan to you. Now, the papers at the courthouse may say that you own your house, but you don't really. It really belongs to God. You are just a steward of that. You're stewards of everything that God has given you, as I am, as every person is. We are stewards before God, and it is required of stewards that they be found worthy of trust. Concentrate on telling the truth every time you speak. No more little white lies. No more convenient lies that are told so many times without any forethought whatsoever. Make it your business to clean those up. And when one pops out, you correct it immediately. Build trust in that little way. That 35 mile an hour speed zone you take every morning at 50 miles an hour, make it your goal to slow down and to go the speed limit, not just when you're watching the police, but also when no one is watching. When you tell somebody that you'll be someplace at a certain time, under certain circumstances, if certain circumstances make it such that it's inconvenient for you to fully comply with what you have told someone that you are going to do, you call that person and you let them know, and you show that you are a trustworthy person by doing that. Call them and let them know if you can't be there by circumstances beyond your control. If someone hands you an extra dollar at the checkout at the store, return that to the cashier and say, "You made a mistake in giving me the correct amount of change." And walk away. When your parents make a commitment to your children, when you make a commitment to your children to be somewhere, be there. When your children make a commitment to your parents that you're going to be at a certain place, and you tell them where you're going to be, that's where you need to be. And if circumstances change and you end up going somewhere else, you call them immediately and you let them know where you are, that plans have changed. And if you can't get in touch with them, you go home. You make your word your bond. You let them know that they can trust you in every situation. Christians, pay your bills on time. Let your word be your bond. Let your yes be yes and your no be no. Speak truth, even if it hurts. Jesus said in Luke 6 and verse 38, the second part of that verse, "By your standard of measure, it will be measured to you in return." If you're faithful, remembering these little things, then that muscle of trust will grow. Gradual little steps will get you there. And when the big test comes, you will be accustomed already to living a life of trust and integrity. And it will be less difficult for Satan to tempt you off of that course, and God will be glorified. And you will hear Christ say, "Well done, good and faithful slave. You were faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Enter into the joy of your master." If you want to be trustworthy, you be attentive to small things. Be faithful with other people's things. And if you have not been faithful in the use of that which is another's, in Luke 16 and verse 12, who will give you that which is your own? A familiar grandparent rule is, if you borrow something from someone, you return it in at least as good a condition, if not better condition. And many of you heard such a rule from your grandparents, and that's a good rule to live by. A man had borrowed someone's lawnmower, and before returning that lawnmower, he took a rag and he cleaned it up on the outside. He raised it underneath and pressure washed all the grass out from under it, cleaned the air filter, put a new spark plug in it, returned it to the man that he borrowed it from. Is that man likely to loan him something else? I think so, don't you? But if he had gotten that lawnmower back and the cover was bent and the wheel was about ready to fall off and it had grass hanging all over it and the filter was clogged, would he ever loan that lawnmower to that person again? Likely not. You see how important that is? And really, isn't that something that goes along with the principles that Jesus Christ taught his followers to live by? I think it is when you look at Matthew 5:39 through 42, when Jesus there says, "Don't resist an evil person, but whoever slaps you on your right cheek, you turn the other to him also. If anyone wants to sue you and take his shirt, let him have your coat also. If whoever forces you to go 1 mile, go with him too." You see, the Christian is of a mindset and an attitude to go beyond what normal people will do to show kindness, goodness, trustworthiness, the good principles of Christianity to other people. That's very important, I think. And I think you agree with me. Be faithful when no one is watching. I like the old saying that goes, "What you are when no one is watching is what you really are. It's what you truly are." That little sentence has rescued Christians throughout time from temptations more times than they can count. What you are when no one is looking is what you truly are. What you do and what I do when someone suddenly points a camera at us shows a lot of times the distinction between what a person is when someone is watching and what they are when no one is watching. When someone points a camera at you, what's the first thing you're concerned about? You know, is my hair windblown, or is it in shape? Are the wrinkles out of my clothing? Are my glasses on straight? You know, someone's getting ready to take my picture, and I want to smile. I want to look happy. But if someone is at a distance taking my picture and I don't know they're there, I don't go through all of that, do I? I just do my normal thing. Those of you who are old enough to remember Big Issues of Life magazine can realize this point as to why that magazine was so popular. If you remember, all of the pictures that they put in the magazine were unposed. They were taken by some photographer who might have been at a distance, who might have had a long-range lens on his camera, to capture the natural setting of the way things were. And some of those photographs are popular and known worldwide and immediately recognized as something that appeared in Life magazine. What you are when no one is looking, when you are unaware that someone is taking your picture, when you're not aware of someone who's studying your actions, is what you really are. And by looking at that, we can learn if we can really trust you or not. Is that really who you are? If you're trustworthy there, then it's a piece of cake to be trustworthy when you're in the limelight. Think about it. Character and integrity, the two things that trust is made of, are really hammered out on a three-headed anvil. Attentiveness to small things, faithfulness with others' things, and consistency when no one is watching. You take care of those areas and you'll be a trustworthy person. The fourth point I want to mention to you is that trust carelessly lost is very difficult and sometimes impossible to regain. Burn me once, shame on you. Burn me twice, shame on me. Have you ever heard that statement before? Think about what that means. It's much harder to earn someone's trust when they've been burned. It's harder to keep their trust when they've been burned by you. In some cases, a level of trust that has been lost through carelessness can never be regained. Think of King David of Israel, the man after God's own heart. His faithfulness to God and his nation was a model to the whole world for the first 50 years of his life. Because of his integrity, the nation of Israel gained its fullest measure of splendor and glory during those years, and God blessed Israel and blessed David. But then came his sin with Bathsheba, and things changed in 2 Samuel chapter 11 and chapter 12. Someone has said that the influence of David's life could be represented by the pitch of a roof. We see David come on the scene and we see his glory rising and rising and rising. And then at one point in his life, when he committed the sin that he did with Bathsheba, we see his influence, his trust, and his family and his nation going downhill, just like that roof goes up one side and down the other. And that's horrible. Christianity is a life of integrity and character. To put it bluntly, you can sleep around and be a good brain surgeon. You can cheat on your mate and not have any trouble continuing to practice law. Apparently, it is no problem to stay in politics and plagiarize or to be unfaithful to your spouse. You can be a successful salesperson and cheat on your income taxes. But you cannot do those things as a Christian and continue to enjoy God's blessing. You must do right in order to have true integrity in the eyes of God. Trust carelessly lost is oftentimes difficult to regain. Sometimes it's impossible. Not that a person cannot be forgiven upon confession and repentance, but there's still that issue of trust. And it's a very different thing than forgiveness. Forgiveness is a gracious gift. But remember, trust must be earned. That is why in most cases, a fallen leader finds it so very difficult to take up his position of leadership once again. Unfortunately, that has happened many times in the Lord's church, and it's very, very sad and disheartening. Forgiveness isn't trust. Trust must be earned by the one who broke it. Sometimes, distrust is really not our fault, just as a side note to mention. It's really the result of the mental condition of someone else. The example of King Saul comes to mind. David had done nothing to Saul to make Saul distrust him, but Saul did distrust him and tried to kill him because he was jealous. So sometimes distrust for a person is not really our fault. It's the fault of another. And then the final point that we want to think about, it's far easier to preserve the trust that you have gained than to have to rebuild it after it is destroyed. Trust can be rebuilt. Parents can trust their children after that trust has been broken. A betrayed marriage can survive, but the process of rebuilding that marriage usually takes a very long time, and it takes a lot of extra effort. It requires constant effort. And even though you come close to getting back to where you were, you never really get back to where you once were once that trust is broken. It's a very important thing. George MacDonald writes in his poem, Sweet Peril, "Alas, how easily things go wrong. A sigh too much or a kiss too long. And there follows a mist and a weeping rain, and life is never the same again." This morning, I call you to remember the sacred trust of your life as a husband, as a wife, in the marriage bond, as a father, as a mother, as a teenage young person, also as a church leader, also as a church servant, a teacher, a citizen of this country, a Christian, a soldier in the Lord's kingdom. People are counting on you. They trust you. Don't let them down. Be trustworthy. This morning I call you to action if you want to rededicate yourself to preserving the all-important trusts in your life, that you will keep the home fires burning for your family, that you will not betray the trust that God has placed in you as one of His children to glorify His name by the thoughts that you think, by the words that you speak, by the behavior of your life, that you will not betray that sacred trust and high calling of God, and that I will not betray and forsake the sacred trust and the high calling of God as a servant of God and as a leader in the local congregation, and that our fellow elders will take that same mantle of responsibility, that all will take their responsibility as servants of God to not betray their Lord and their Savior, Jesus Christ. Can we help you today to become a Christian as a believer, to repent of your sins and confess Christ before men, to be baptized in water for the forgiveness of sins, as every case of conversion in the pages of the book of Acts teaches? Can we help you with that today? If you're not walking close to God, we want you to walk close to God when you leave this morning. And if we can help you in any way to do that, we'll pray with you. We'll pray for you. We'll do anything that we can to help you with a closer walk with God. Can we help you today? If we can, please come and let us know while we stand together and encourage you by singing this song.